As many of you who listen to the programme regularly will know, we're in the heart of the hurling season at the moment, and hurling is one of Ireland's most popular sports. And the design of the slitter, because that's the ball, the slitter, right, is central to how one of the world's fastest field sports is played. It must allow for short passing with the hand in hurley, accurate striking for large distances, and comfortable catching by players. I'm telling you this because my next guest was heavily involved with the design of a new slitter and has been working on it. And a couple of years ago, well, what, 2 years nearly now, wrote a story for RTE that I happened to come across during the week called The Story Behind Hurling's New Yellow Slitter. I'm delighted to say that we're joined on the line by Professor Kieran Moran, who is that man who's going to tell us the story behind the slitter. Kieran, good to talk to you. How are you today?
Very well, Gerard. Thanks for having me on.
Not at all. How do you put yourself in a position in your career that has the GAA contacting you to ask you to help to design a new slitter?
Well, I suppose just for clarity, it's not a new slitter. What it is it's taking the existing regulations, but it's trying to ensure that we have traceability of the slitter. Because some of the challenges around this were that whether deliberately or accidentally we're producing slitters outside of the rules and regulations. And the GAA first contacted me, I suppose, back in 2003. My background is in biomechanics, the study of human movement and its interaction as well with sports equipment. And what they wanted to do was come up with a regulation back in 2003 that would attempt to narrow the range of designs of slitters.
Okay.
And this was a real challenge because if you got, you know, 100 players or 100 coaches in a room for any sport, you'd never get them all to agree on the design of the slitter, in this case, the ball for the sport. So the approach we took was to take the existing slitters that were out there, and we measured all of the mechanical characteristics. We took out those that were traveling too far and too short. This is back in 2003, and came up with an average and a range that all manufacturers would have to adhere to. But the challenge has been, Joe, that over the years, some manufacturers haven't stuck to that. So that's where this need for traceability of a new slitter has come in.
When I am sitting watching golf, I see ads all the time for a new golf ball that can give you extra length or extra distance or extra loft or whatever the case might be. And this is just, I suppose, technology being employed within the industry. Was it similar then in hurling that manufacturers were saying to teams or to counties, you know, my slitter, our slitter will get you an extra 10 yards or my slitter will get you this, that or the other without the GAA giving its blessing?
That's an interesting way of putting it, because certainly within golf, that is what's happened. And they face a real challenge in golf because they're trying to limit how far the golf ball can travel because of the design of the golf courses. I don't think in hurling and camogie, the manufacturers actually said our ball will travel further because they knew that was against the rules and regulations. Okay. I think it was more to the fact that as manufacturers produce slitters, that players naturally preferred slitters that would travel further. And therefore, they tended towards manufacturers that would allow them to hit the ball as far as possible. And I think there was just a gradual creep in the design of the slitter that some manufacturers allowed, not all, some manufacturers allowed the slitters to travel further.
And it was interesting in the article that you wrote that you were saying that, you know, it's in the player's DNA to score. That's the ultimate, pardon the pun, goal. And so if this was allowed to happen and to continue and to develop, you could have a goalkeeper scoring from his own line at the other end, or you could have somebody from the 65-yard line, you know, taking a shot and going over the bar. So it would have destroyed a certain amount of the enjoyment in the game, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would. You know, part of any sport is the competition between players to possession of the ball and then to play that ball into a position that someone can score from or they can score from. And if you have a situation where people can puck hit the slitter from one end of the field to the other end of the field, then it destroys that natural competition midfield of the sport. And the GAA, obviously, going back to 2003, wanted to protect that.
Where did you start with this then? As you said, you examined certain manufacturers' slitters and so on, but when you had all of that data gathered, where do you start?
Yeah, really then what we did is, you know, we took the average of those and we set a range of values that people could have. So, you know, there's one measure, it's called a coefficient of restitution. But basically, you can think of how bouncy a ball is. You know, when a ball strikes the hurler, the ground, it deforms. And this coefficient of restitution is how quickly it rebounds back to its original shape. And so that determines, to a large extent, how far a ball will travel in the air, whether it's a slitter or a golf ball or a ball in Spanish pelota. It doesn't really matter. It's the same principle. So we measured this coefficient of restitution and we said, right, what we want is for all slitters, all balls to fall within this range. And that's what all manufacturers have to do and still have to do.
Does the GAA stipulate in their rules and regulations what was ultimately the result of what you decided in that particular trial or those particular trials and exercises?
So we have the rules and regulations that are there for which referees should be able to check a slitter before a match begins. So okay. That's like, if you like, its diameter and its weight. But there is another rule, this coefficient of restitution. It's not in the players and referees handbook, but it is within the rules and regulations of the sport held by the GAA.
What's a slitter made from?
Yeah, it's interesting. It used to be, like, if you went back a long time from when balls were first produced, it was actually made from horse hair wrapped by so it's the short cow and horse hair, and then it's wrapped by the long hair from the tail or the mane of a horse. That's going back to when it was originally produced. Then it moved over and the cork became the center of the ball, and it was wrapped in leather. And then when cork was expensive and harder to produce, it moved to polyurethane.
Okay.
And so now all of the slitters have this central polyurethane plastic center to it, solid center, wrapped with this leather. And interestingly, hurling and camogie have this rib. It's to describe it to your viewers, it's a few millimeters high, so it can be up to 5 millimeters high, and it goes around in this sort of S shape around the ball, and that makes it harder to control, and that's maybe part of the appeal of hurling, the challenge about controlling the ball.
Now, Torpy's, based in County Clare, would be a well-known hurling manufacturer, one of the probably the best known in Ireland. And I visited the plant quite a number of times over the years, buying hurleys from my own lads and so on. And speaking with them recently, they've developed a bamboo hurley. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but does the bamboo hurley or any, you know, I know hurleys are made from ash traditionally, but does the hurley that you have in your hand make a difference to the flight and the distance and the speed of the ball, of the slitter?
Yeah, I think if you change any material in a product, something that's going to strike the ball, it's going to have an influence on it. It's interesting because that's one side of the game that hasn't been looked at in detail. And at the moment now, because ash is becoming harder and harder to come by and more expensive, there is this move to move over to other materials. And some have you moved over to carbon-based hurls I've seen. There's the bamboo ones. And so each of them will have a different influence on how the ball travels after it's been struck.
Why is the ball yellow now?
Yeah. So one of the challenges is that prior to this, the ball was white. Mm. And people had said at times it was difficult to see the white ball, particularly in Ireland. The ball travels high up into the air. And for players to be able to see it against often a white cloudy background and the ball then traveling for the spectators across the field, and you'd have other spectators opposite them, people were suggesting that it was hard to see the ball. So it was an optometrician, Valerie Kennelly, who suggested that we move over to a yellow colour in the same way that tennis moved over in 1972. It's an optic yellow colour. And it's basically the colour that is the easiest for the human eye to see.
Incredible. It's amazing the science that goes behind something as simple as a schlitter that you'd be looking at on a Sunday afternoon in Páirceachaíve or somewhere like that. It's brilliant. Did you meet much or any resistance from clubs, counties, teams, players, mentors in your efforts to try and regulate what's been hit?
No, not good. Really. I mean, the manufacturers themselves are happy and want a consistent slitter. And I think the more that you can come up with a clear regulation for the slitter, the happier they are to go away and produce one to those standards. So the biggest thing about the new slitter, so we've got the, when I say new slitter, it's a yellow colored slitter. It's adhering to the same standards. But what's particularly changing is that there's a chip, a tag being put inside the slitter. And this, it has something in it that communicates through, it's called near field communication. It's basically the same when you take your mobile phone and you go to pay in a supermarket now, and you can pay by your mobile phone, because as you move your phone near to the scanner, they can communicate with each other. Mm-hmm. And that's the same with this tag that's gone into the slitter. So what it enables us to do now is that a referee or a player or Joe Public, when they go and have a slitter in their hand, they can download an app, put the mobile phone up next to the slitter, and discover, is it an official slitter or not? And that's going to make a big difference then, because before we had a stamp of approval designed by Avril Kennan, and the problem was that manufacturers could just copy that and claim that they had a slitter that adhered to the rules and regulations, when in fact, when I tested them, they may not have adhered to the rules and regulations. But in embedding a tag in the center of the slitter now means that people cannot produce counterfeit slitters. And the other side of this is that the GA wanted to make sure, like all sporting bodies, that there wasn't the problem with manufacturers using unethical child or distressed women labor practices.
Okay. Well, is that how the whole Hawkeye thing works?
Well, no, that's a different technology. Okay. So that Hawkeye works by tracking the ball from long range using cameras. This now uses a tag inside it, but you can only read that tag from about 5-10 centimeters away. So it's never going to be used for tracking a ball. It's purely used for traceability to know whether the slitter is appropriately produced or not.
And just for people who don't know what Hawkeye is the system that is used to determine whether a ball was inside the two bars for a point or outside the two bars for a point. That's just to clarify that. This has been a fascinating chat about the schlitter. Are we where we need to be in, and is that it, or will there be further development, do you think? Because if you take a look at the development of the Slitter in the last 25, 30 years, and you compare it with the development in the players 25 or 30 years ago, and I suppose Gerlach Nann and the Clare team back in 1995 started this needing to be super fit to take part, and you see them now, you know, young lads of 18 and 19, and they're just, you know, they're built like blocks, which is incredible. So will there be further and ongoing development or monitoring, or what do you think?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question, because you're absolutely right. The athletic profile of players has changed dramatically over the last 10, 20 years. And that's one of the reasons why, in theory, the ball can be obviously struck further. I think it's something that needs to be monitored. And that's what the GA is looking at, is how far does the slitter travel? And if at some point they decide that it does travel too far, then they will have to address that. But at the moment, the work that's being done on the slitter is about ensuring that manufacturers that adhere to the current rules and regulations so that we can protect the integrity of the game.
You noticed my eyes were taken off the screen there because I was looking for something and I found it, just to demonstrate to people how the athletic profile of the players has changed over the years. Nowadays, there is a very strict diet that players must adhere to. There is a lack of alcohol they can't consume when they're training and when the season is on. And I have a little meme on my phone that says some sports stars train for 6 months solid, some give up sex for months. But in 1982, the Offaly team took their dedication to another level. I don't know if you're familiar with this, Kieran. On the morning of the 1982 All-Ireland, a journalist asked the Offaly manager, Eugene McGee, how badly Offaly wanted this win. He replied, "There are men in that dressing room who haven't had a pint since last Wednesday night." So there you go. That's the change in the athletic profile for you. I know my eldest son plays hurling at club level, and you know he's so clean living when the season is on. And so I love when he's playing hurling. It's great.
Yeah, and also just like any sport, I mean, it's so passionate within Ireland. The GAA has a penetration into every village within Ireland, and every village has their own hurling or football of both teams. And the sheer competition and the desire for success has led to this huge development of athletic ability amongst all the players. Both hurling and camogie. And you're absolutely right. The amount of time they devote to physical training is far in excess that was ever previously devoted to it. So, yeah, they are athletes in the truest sense of the world.
Indeed. And they're amateurs, it must be pointed out.
Yeah. Amateurs by the fact that none of them can get paid for anything, but professional in terms of their attitude towards sports.
Absolutely. Professor Kieran Moran, it's been fascinating talking to you. Just to give you the credit, you're with Dublin City University, DCU. I was very fortunate to come across that article that you wrote back in October of 2020. I think it shines a great light on the Slitter and maybe gives everybody a better understanding of it. Thanks a million for talking to us about it. Fascinating indeed. And we wish you well in the future.
Thanks very much, Joe.